So it's not difficult to interpret the parable. I'm not going to go through it line by line, as it were. That isn't necessary. But I'm going to comment on just a few details. First of all, the good physician goes to a distant country. The father goes away from the sons. The father is separated from the sons. And this separation represents the state of alienation. Alienation from one's true nature, if you like. Alienation of the lower self, represented by the sons, from the higher self, represented by the father, the physician. It's the same state of alienation about which we heard in connection with the parable of the return journey, where the son again goes away from the father, or the parable of the drunken man and the jewel, where the drunken man goes away from his friend and is only subsequently found by him. We've dealt with this whole subject of alienation in these parables, in lecture 4. So I'm not saying anything about it now. Except that, as I believe I said then, this separation has no beginning in time. The beginning of the parable, the once upon a time, therefore takes place outside time. Once upon a time means, as it were, forever, outside time. Now again, we're told, the sons become delirious by drinking the father's poisonous medicines. They're poisonous, but they're medicines. Medicines are good. But they are good. They do you good only if you take them properly. Otherwise, they do harm. It's as if the parable suggests there's nothing wrong with the emotions, nothing wrong with thought, nothing wrong with the physical body even. It's when they are misdirected, misused, that the trouble starts. And it's even the same with the Dharma. The Buddha leaves the Dharma, as it were, with us, having preached it. The Dharma is meant to help us. The teaching is meant to help us. But if we misuse it, it can even do us harm. I remember one of our summer retreats, we had along a young lady who was delighted with one particular Buddhist teaching. She really loved the Anatta doctrine. And as soon as she came, she said, that's what's converted me to Buddhism. There's no self, there's no soul. And she was really plugging this for all she was worth. There's no ego. Huh? There's no I, there's no me. I'm just not there. I'm just not here. I am not. And she went on and on in this way. And of course, being at the retreat, she had to do quite a bit of meditation. And one day she came to me rather slowly and thoughtfully, and she said, I've just found out something in the meditation. So I asked her, what's that? She said, I know now why I like the no-self doctrine. So I said, well, why? She said, because I hate myself. Huh? I like to hear, I'm not there. I like to cancel myself out. It's just an expression of my self-hatred. So she was making the wrong use of that doctrine, that teaching, no doubt true. She was using it to confirm her own self-hatred, which isn't a good thing. And that's the sort of thing that people do. They misuse the teaching. They misuse the doctrine in this way. So sometimes we ought to ask ourselves, what is it in Buddhism that especially appeals to us? What is it that we specially like or don't like? Is it all that glamorous ritual, all those lovely flowers on the altar, those beautiful images, all brightly polished, shining with brasso? Is that what it is? Or is it that meditation where you can sit down in all that lovely, peaceful atmosphere and just glide away into some nice, comfortable, dreamy, womb-like state? Is that it? Or is it all those books you can read and all those interesting intellectual things you can find out about the five skandhas, and 84 different types of consciousness? Is that the sort of thing that you love? Is that what Buddhism means to you? Or is it all that beautiful art? Or those lovely tankas which those poor dear lamas are still painting in India, all along the Himalayas? Or what is it? We have to ask ourselves, what is it that we like and why? Again, the parable says, the sons who have lost their senses say they want to be cured, but they won't take the medicine. Now, this is a very common situation indeed. I remember when I was in India, used to go around here and there, and especially meet lots of Hindus. And when a Hindu comes to see you, he doesn't ask about the weather. He says, you know, as though his whole heart is in it, or Swamiji, please tell me how I can become enlightened in this very life, now if possible, preferably. And he just waits for the answer. But of course he isn't serious. Not in 999 cases out of 1,000. It's just sort of good religious form to ask this sort of question. He has no intention of trying. He'd be horrified if you really told him and expected him to follow your advice. So people always ask for a teaching or ask for a cure, ask for the medicine, but they don't want it. Sometimes it's the last thing they want. And this reminds me of another story, this time from Japan. I know I've told it before. I know it's on some other tape, but that was a long time ago, so we're going to have it again. As I said, this story is from Japan, and it concerns a very devout old woman. And she was a follower of the Pure Land School. When she died, she didn't want to be born again in this dirty, wicked old earth. She wanted to be reborn in the Pure Land, in the Pure Land of the Buddha of Infinite Light. She wanted to be reborn from a beautiful purple and gold lotus flower and just sit there, ages upon ages, just listening to the Buddha of Infinite Light preaching. That's all she wanted. And she wanted to die quite quickly so that she could be reborn there as a result of her prayers and her meditations and so on. And every morning she used to go along to the temple and used to kneel down and prostrate herself in front of the great image of the Buddha of Infinite Light. And she'd say, oh Buddha of Infinite Light, please take me quickly. Please take me away from this wicked world. I'm so fed up with it. I'm so tired. I just want to go on to die, want to be reborn in your Pure Land. So every morning she'd come and she'd pray in this way and weep and shed tears and prostrate herself and beg to be taken to the Pure Land. Beg that she might die and be reborn there. So there was a certain monk in that temple who noticed her behavior. You could hardly help noticing it because she used to, you know, pray very loudly and make her petition very loudly. So one day he thought, all right, we'll see. So he stationed himself behind the image. And she came as usual. She bowed down, prostrated herself. Oh, Buddha of Infinite Light, please take me. Please take me to your Pure Land. So a voice came booming out from behind the image, or from the image as she thought, I shall take you now. So when she heard that Buddha's voice, she let out a shriek. She fled. She said, won't the Buddha let me have my little joke? So that's the story. We ask for the medicine, but we don't really want it. Then the parable says, their grief, that their father's supposed death brings the sons to their senses. And this brings up a point I've often mentioned before, which is no development without suffering. It's as though we can't evolve without suffering. We can't evolve just with joy and happiness all the time. It doesn't mean that there's pain and suffering all the time, but it does mean that without some pain, some suffering, there's no development, no higher evolution. This is not to say, unfortunately, that there's no suffering without development, no suffering without evolution. This isn't the case. But certainly it is the case for the vast majority of people, most of the time, without some stress, some pain, some suffering, to, as it were, spur them on, there's no real serious development.